Trying to get both the body and the mind in position. The body in position, it's like we're sitting here right now. Hands on our lap, palms up, eyes closed, back comfortably straight. Then you get the mind in position. Think thoughts of goodwill, like we did the chant just now. May I be happy, may all beings be happy. Reflect that you don't want to take any issues with anybody into your meditation. So put all the issues of the day aside. And the goodwill is there to create the context for what we're doing right now. If any thoughts come up in the course of the sit that are not related to your breath, just have goodwill for any of the people involved, goodwill for yourself, and back to the breath. Now focus your attention on the breath. As you breathe in, take a couple of good long, deep in and out breaths, and notice where you feel the breathing in the body. Think of the breath not so much as the air coming in and out through the nose, but the movement of energy in the body. Where do you feel that most prominently? Focus your attention there. And then ask yourself if it's comfortable. What kind of breathing would be more comfortable? You can just pose that question in the mind and see how the body responds. And if it doesn't seem to respond, you can test it a little bit. Try long breathing for a while, short breathing, in long, out short, in short, out long. Think of the breath energy flowing through the body in different ways, down the front, down the back, all around you. Because as we get the mind concentrated, we're focusing on having a centered but broad awareness. One spot in your awareness will be more prominent than the others, but you don't want it to block out the others. You want everything to be connected. So as you breathe in, you think of the whole body breathing in. You breathe out, the whole body breathing out. And whatever sense of ease you can get in the breath, allow that to spread through the body as well. We're creating a home for the mind. And also feeding the mind. This is a point that Ajahn Sawat would make. He was the founder of the monastery. He passed away 17 years ago. It's quite a time, amount of time already. People were born and that they are almost adults. But he left behind a lot of things for us in the form of his teachings. And of course, he was the one who thought up the idea of having a monastery here. It's good to think about his teachings. And one of them was this. We're trying to create a home for the mind here, a place where you feel at ease, where you feel like you belong. We're also feeding the mind, because the mind is hungry. It doesn't just sit here waiting for things to come. It's not one of those animals in the sea that just latches onto a rock and just contents itself with whatever comes its way. We're out looking for things to feed our needs. And if we don't give the mind something good to feed on right here, right now, it's going to look for whatever. So think about the pleasure you can create as you breathe, as a kind of food for the mind. The mind likes pleasure. If it doesn't get pleasure here, who knows where it's going to go. So try to be as interested as possible as you can in how the breathing goes and the different ways you can relate to it. And as the breath gets more comfortable, you feel well fed, you feel rested, and you're in a safe place. What the Buddha calls the body in and of itself. In other words, you're not thinking about the body as it relates to the world, how other people might view it, or whether it's up to the work you might have to do in the world. You're just simply with the sensation of how your body feels right here, right now. As the Buddha said, that's your safe territory. You wander outside of this, and who knows what's going to get you. The image he has is of a quail. If the quail stays in the plowed-up field, it's safe because it can hide behind rocks. But one day this one quail left the field, and a hawk swooped down and carried it off. And the quail said, "Oh, my lack of good merit. If I had been in my ancestral home, the hawk wouldn't have gotten me. The hawk would have been no match for me." Now the hawk was a little piqued by this little tiny quail saying things like that. So he said, "Okay, where is your ancestral home?" And the quail said, "It was this field with all the stones plowed up." So the hawk said, "Okay, go there, but you won't escape me." So the quail goes down, stands on one of the stones, starts taunting the hawk. And so the hawk swoops down again. This time, though, the quail, as he sees the hawk coming out at full speed, slips behind the stone. And the hawk shatters his breast on the stone and dies. The Buddha gave this as an analogy for the mind in the body, and not wandering out after the kinds of sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, or thoughts about those things that we normally use to feed the mind, which we try to make as our homes, but they're not really good homes. They keep disintegrating on us. And all too often we end up doing unskillful things in order to get them back, or to get new ones. So here's a safe place to find a sense of well-being, a sense of belonging here. When the mind is safe like this, then it settles down, and it's willing to do the work that needs to be done. Because as you settle down, you'll find that even as the mind gets still, there'll still be little disturbances here and there. And as the John Sawat would say, see those as stress. It may be subtle, but you want to be really picky about what kind of mind state you're going to accept here as your home. The Buddha was not the sort of person to teach us to say, well, just accept whatever comes up, and if there's pain, accept the pain, and if there's pleasure, accept the pleasure. As he said, it is possible to breathe in a way that gives rise to pleasure, gives rise even to rapture, feelings of fullness and refreshment. That's part of the path. The duty of mindfulness is actually to give rise to skillful qualities in the mind and make sure they don't pass away. So we're not just here watching things coming and going. Since the mind already has this tendency to want to feed, and it is proactive, allow it to be proactive in figuring out what would be a better form of well-being for it. In other words, instead of lowering your standards and saying, well, just accept whatever, you raise the standards. The slightest bit of movement in the mind, you look into it. The slightest bit of stress in the breath, you look into it. And you try to untangle it. This way you get to work in a comfortable place. You go to work at home. You're well fed. Then the mind gets to know itself a lot better, because greed, aversion, and delusion, when they first come, they do come in subtle forms. And if you want to see why the mind goes for them, you've got to see them right as they arise. So any little disturbance, it's potentially greed, aversion, delusion, fear, jealousy. Sometimes it, in and of itself, is not much, this little stirring in the mind. But there's some other part of the mind that wants some action. Once a little greed, once some aversion. And so it takes whatever excuse it can get to go in that direction. So you're going to catch the mind in the act. This is where you do it, right here at the breath. Because the breath is where the body and the mind meet. And as long as you're with the breath, you know you're in the context of the present moment. So you can see what's coming as it's coming, not as a theory, not as an abstraction, but as an actual event in the mind. sometimes reflected in the breath. But it's all happening right here. So we develop a sense of well-being, first to soothe the mind, so it feels like it belongs here, to feed the mind. But then when it's soothed and fed, we don't just let it lie around. We give it work to do. But it's work that we can do with a sense of well-being. And John Lee, another teacher of the forest tradition, had a nice image. He says, when we're running around under the power of greed, aversion, delusion, it's like we're being slaves to crooks and thieves. They get us to do their dirty work, and then they run away. Whereas when we do the work of meditation, we're working for the Buddha. But really, we're working for ourselves. But the Buddha teaches us how to work for ourselves in a way where we can do honorable things, upstanding things, good work, work that is for our well-being. So now that you're fed, sheltered, do the good work of seeing where the mind creates suffering for itself. It doesn't have to. The less suffering you create for yourself, the less of a burden you'll be for others. So it's good work all around.